welcome to another episode of Inside the Helmet with Matthew Brabham, driver of the number 83 Pro Mazda machine for Andretti Autosport. An absolute domination of this year's Pro Mazda Championship. Matthew, thank you so much for taking time out in your preparations for the upcoming Mid-Ohio race.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Well, with all these, of course, we like to hear how you got involved in motorsports. But for you particularly, was it a foregone conclusion with your grandfather and your father, your whole family, so immersed in the world of motorsports that you were going to follow that path as well?
Not really. I mean, they didn't really want me racing at all because they knew how much it cost and how hard it actually was. So they were kind of trying to push me away from it. But I grew up listening to their stories around the family dinner table, even though their experiences in racing and their lives. And it was just so inspiring listening to that growing up as a kid and being around it, that it was really my decision and what I wanted to do. So I managed to talk them into doing it. And yeah, here I am today.
Well, you got started in karting, as most open wheel racers do, and you started right off having some really nice successes, instantly getting a lot of wins your first time out. When was it that you realized that you were competitive and that this is something that you can move forward with?
Well, it definitely took a while. I mean, when I first started go-karting, it was just a hobby with me and my dad. And, you know, we did everything ourselves, and we just did it out of the back of a van pretty much, and prepped all the carts ourselves and did everything ourselves in go-karting. So, you know, it was a little bit of just a hobby of, you know, dad and I getting out on the weekend and spending some time together. But yeah, I just kind of caught the racing bug, and yeah, I kept wanting to win and do better and be more competitive every race I went to, and it just slowly started accumulating. And towards, you know, when I started getting older and more mature in go-karts, that's when I really started, you know, really focusing on racing more so than anything else in my life. And I really, you know, started doing well and getting some wins, and kind of decided that, you know, it'd be worth going to Formula Ford when I was about, you know, 13 or 14 years old. And that's really when I first stepped out of go-karts and got into a race car and drove a race car for the first time. That was really the moment where I was like, yeah, this is definitely what I want to do and, you know, pursue.
What were some of the differences between racing a go-kart versus racing a Formula Ford? I mean, it's a very different machine. I mean, it's got suspension.
Oh, yeah. it was really tough for me. You know, first off, I came straight out of go-karts, and getting used to, I mean, driving a race car just requires so much more skill, and you have to do so many more things in a race car than you do in a go-kart. If you're in a go-kart, you just come into the corner and just hit the brake really lightly and punch it, and, you know, kind of turn into the corner and get on the throttle, and there's no other required, you know, necessary skill level other than that in go-karting. You know, of course you learn a lot of race craft and racing against people and what racing's all about, but actually driving, it's you don't actually learn too much in go-karts. And I find there's a lot of bad habits that you learn in go-karts that don't carry forth into race cars. So when I first got into race cars, I was really struggling, and it took a long time to slowly get over that. But my dad was there the whole way with me, so that was a really big help. But just the main things are braking. That was my biggest, you know, the hardest thing for me to get used to, because getting the inertia and all the other factors that you have in a race car with the weight and, you know, the suspension and changing down at the same time was just almost like a mind overload when I first stepped into a race car. And I had to think about so many things trying to brake and stop the race car that it was just really tough to get used to, and it was really hard to get to perfect. But I think now I'm at a point where it's just one of those things where you keep doing it over and over again until you don't have to think about it, and then you can focus on other things. So at that, you know, at this point in my career, I don't even think about braking, whereas when I first stepped into a race car, it was like the only thing I'd have to concentrate on, because otherwise everything would just get all screwed up.
Well, what was it that finally clicked? Describe to us that transition, if you would, of going from trying to figure things out until things were just clicking. It was well oiled, and all of a sudden you were taking up wins.
I mean, it was just a massive snowball effect, and it happened really, really quickly. I mean, I did my first season ever in the Australian National Formula Ford Championship, and I was, you know, really kind of struggling. I mean, my goal every race was just to try and make it in the top 10. And I think I finished in the top 10 twice in the 1 year. And, you know, most of the time I was down the back, but it was my first year ever and I was learning and whatnot. So it wasn't too bad, but, you know, it's definitely frustrating if you're winning in go-karts and you step out of it into a race car and now you're down the back again and having to learn everything over again. It's definitely frustrating. But for me, I mean, I think in Formula Ford, in my last race of my first year, I finished 17th. And then the next year, in my first race I did, I won. And so it was just this massive jump from year to year. And it was just a snowball effect in the off season. I got with a really, really good team that knew, you know, really, really worked on helping the driver learn the car and the setups and everything. And my dad was there and it started to all come together. And, you know, once I did it once and got it really like everything fine, then I found it kind of snowballed and I could keep doing it. Like it was one of those things where I did it once. Now I can keep doing it and not have to think about it too much. But yeah, for me, it was like almost over, you know, an off season where I went from like almost dead last on the grid to coming out in the first race and winning. And it was really, really special. I mean, for my dad and me, my whole family, I mean, it was one of those moments where you go, okay, well, this, you know, we might have a shot here, you know, winning races and being competitive. So it was great.
Well, there in Australia, you have a very rich heritage of racing, but the top level racing there in Australia is the Tin Tops, V8 supercars. What led you to follow an open wheel path versus driving, you know, a saloon car or doing sports car racing?
Well, I've always been really interested in Formula One, especially from like what, you know, when my grandfather was racing, and I felt that was so cool to listen to those kind of stories. And, you know, I'd grown up on the Gold Coast, watching the IndyCar race come there, and, you know, that's where I lived, and the IndyCars were raced every year, and it was such a super like hyped up event. And I felt that that was always more interesting than V8 supercars. And also I was watching a lot of the, you know, the people and met a lot of the drivers that were in V8 supercars and researching it and what they did in their careers. And it seemed that pretty much all the people that raced V8 supercars were at some point in their career in Europe or America racing open wheel cars, and they didn't quite make it to the pinnacle overseas and kind of dropped back and got into V8 supercars. I mean, I really like V8 supercars, and it's a really, really competitive, you know, environment, and it's such a great series in Australia. But I felt that, you know, I wanted to at least have a shot at trying to make it overseas, in IndyCar or Formula One, at least before I, you know, came back and did V8 supercars. I think you can go over and try and make it in IndyCar and V8 or Formula One and come back to V8 supercar, but you can't. You know, go to V8 supercar and then move out of a saloon car and try and make it in an open wheel car. I think that's quite a tough jump.
Well, you had basically two avenues in front of you. Coming to the United States and following the Mazda Road to Indy on your way to driving an IndyCar, or going over to Europe and going through the multitude of Formula Series they have over there on your way up to GP3, GP2, and then Formula One. You ended up in the USF 2000 National Championship last year in 2012. Why choose the US route versus the European route?
Well, I was actually originally looking at choosing the European route. I had a sponsor in Australia that was willing to sponsor me in Europe and help me make you know, get into Formula Renault 2.0 there. And I was going to live in France, and it was all going to be nice and this and that. And in the end, the deal fell over right at the last minute. So I was kind of looking at maybe going to, you know, still trying to make it and go over to Europe. Or I had a you know, there was a couple of there was Australian racing in USF 2000, Luke Ellery, and I know I was looking at what he was doing as well, and, you know, looking at everything and all the options and trying to weigh out what was the best for me. And at that point, we didn't really have much, you know, we didn't have like a sponsor behind us or anything, and we kind of realized that if you try and make it and go through Europe without a sponsor, it's really, really tough, and it's such a cutthroat kind of world over there in Europe with racing. And if you don't kind of come in with a splash and a whole bunch of backing and get to the best team and have everything, you know, the tip top level, and you don't perform because you don't have all these you know, resources, then then you really get shafted quickly, and then you don't really have a chance of ever making it in Europe or to Formula One. And so we kind of decided that, you know, it's best to try and lay off and not go to Europe at this particular point in time. And my dad was raced against Wayne Taylor, back in his career, and he was associated with a team called, Cape Motorsports, which I raced with last year. So we got talking to him about America and what the series was. And once we kind of discovered this Road to Indy series, it was, and, ladder system, it was kind of the obvious choice for us because, if I could come in and make a splash and win the championship, and I could keep moving up without having to rely on backing and sponsorship, which would be what I'd have to do in Europe. And, having that reassurance was just really, really, helped my ease my dad's mind into, convincing him to go to keep racing, because in the end, it's him that was paying the bills. And, it's, and, it, and it's putting, it's a great deal of pressure on my family as well to do it and, move over here. And so luckily he was foolish enough to, and I was able to talk him into it. It was, that's, one of the main reasons. But, now that I've been over here for a couple of years, I mean, it was definitely an absolutely fantastic option. I think it was probably, it's been well worth it.
Well, how different is the USF 2000 machine than the Formula Ford that you were driving? What was there a big driving style change that you had to make, or was it pretty much the same old stuff, just with a little bit more horsepower?
It was a little tough to get used to. But it wasn't such a big jump where it was like really having to learn everything over again as, the jump from go-karting to Formula Ford was. It was definitely a lot smaller than that. But, I felt it was it was a pretty smooth jump. I mean, the car is pretty much exactly the same as a Formula Ford. So, just with wings. So in all the slow corners, it was almost identical, the same gearbox. The same method of changing down and going through the slow corners. So I was, right up to speed in the slow corners almost instantly. It was just the faster corners, which I kind of struggled with because, the faster you go, the more downforce you get. So in the really fast corners where you're purely relying on the downforce from the wing and the diffuser, it takes a lot of time to build up the bravery to just really drive it in hard and wait, use the speed and the aero to really grip the car in the middle of the corner, because you're kind of always, scared that, you're going to just all of a sudden lose grip and slide off because you're going way too fast and you don't take into account, the amount of grip you get from the wings. So I think I drove on the Anderson Race Park for the first time ever driving the car, and that was almost, it was pretty much a go-kart track. So it was all slow corners and I was quick straight away. And it was like, oh, this is pretty, I was pretty confident that I could do, get in and do really, really well straight away. But then we went to Sebring straight after and going through the fast, like turn one and the last corner at Sebring, I was like, got really, really frightened. And it took a long time for me, to build up confidence in the faster corners. But once I kind of figured it all out and got going, it wasn't too bad. And I had experienced teammates around me as well that I could really build off and learn quickly off them as well. So it was great.
Well, you certainly landed with the best team in USF 2000 at the time, with Cape Motorsports, with Wayne Taylor Racing. You also had an extremely competitive teammate in Spencer Pigot, who was backed by Team Pelfrey at the time. And you come into Sebring, and you take the win in your first USF 2000 race. Had to be a boost of confidence. But then your teammate Spencer, he comes and takes the next five races from you, coming out of Mid-Ohio. And of course, the second race in Mid-Ohio didn't end well for either of you, unfortunately, there on that damp track. What was your thinking leaving Mid-Ohio? What were your thoughts about the championship at that point?
I mean, I think, the whole time I always was, it was in the championship fight. It was always very close. Even, it was one of those weird things where even though Spencer had won five races in a row, we were almost, we were still really, really close in the points. Because I kept getting the fastest lap or this and that. And those little extra bonus points, really, really helped me that whole year. And I think in the end, it really just came down to those little bonus points because it was such a close championship between him and I. And I think, I only won the championship by like 4 or 5 points. And I definitely got, more than 4 or 5 points from fastest laps, in the championship. So it was just one of those things where, I was hanging in there the whole time despite that. But I mean, Spencer and I were just neck and neck the whole year. And, we were really just pushing each other to the limit every single time. Every single race, and it was always just me and him at the front. And I think that really helped us both, learn as drivers as well. And we both kind of got into our own league and because we were so competitive and we're all on the same team, we could see what each other were doing. I think that really gave us an advantage over everybody else, because we could try different things on the car, and we were so evenly kind of matched that whole year that it really just meshed well with the team, and we were able to stay up there the whole year. But I mean, everybody kind of knew that the championship was so close, and we're always up the front all the time, in the top three no matter what. It'll just come down to like a couple of, whoever has a couple of bad races was going to lose the championship. And Mid-Ohio, I was a little bit behind in the championship, but I knew we still had quite a few races left, and there was definitely still a chance. And in the end, Spencer just had a couple of bad races and unlucky moments, and that really, really cost him. And I was just able to capitalize on that in the last couple of races.
Well, that was going to be the thing that I brought up, was your consistency, because in the end it was Spencer having a couple of bad races, as you mentioned, having a couple out of the top 10 finishes that really put the nail in the coffin. So that although he had an enormous number of wins that season, you're coming through with what, two events out of the entire year. Three events, pardon me, where you weren't on the podium, if not winning. And so that consistency is that something that you picked up in karting and Formula Ford, or
I think it was more so just that one year, because in Formula Ford I was a little bit inconsistent, and go-karting, it's kind of like one of those things where you just go to one race and it's just a one-off race you try and win. So I never really had experience in trying to go for a championship, but my dad was very experienced in that, and my family obviously with the IndyCar racing and IMSA racing and Formula One. So I guess it was just one of those things where it was, my dad was really focused on keeping me in the right place and being consistent. Yeah, and in the end, definitely helped me, well, majorly, like helped me win the championship. And I think, a little bit is it's hard to be consistent, all the time. But I think the team was really, really good and experienced at every single track, and they were just did such a great job of making sure the cars were the best, and we always had the edge at every. Thank the team for that as well, for being so consistent. And we rarely had problems on the cars and mechanical failures really at all, and barely any. So you have to rely on the team a lot for consistency, and also as a driver yourself. But I mean, it was just one of those years. I mean, so far this year it's been really consistent as well, and the team's working really great. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of, it's just one of those things I kind of just learned last year, and I'm trying to carry over into this year.
Well, speaking of this year, you got the scholarship to move up to Pro Mazda, and this is one of the things that you said earlier that you were really hoping to get, right? The win the championship, and that eases the pressure for trying to find resources to move up to the next level. And so far, it's been an amazing year for you. But I've got to ask, the opening round of the Pro Mazda Championship was at the brand new Circuit of the Americas in Austin. Tell us what it was like to drive that track, virtually brand new. I think by then the only people that had run on it was the Formula One guys, right?
I think it was just the Formula One guys, and it was I mean, it was absolutely incredible. It's definitely by far my favorite road course here in America, especially driving it and like seeing the facilities. And driving an F1 track is always really, really cool. And I find it was the way they laid the track out, and the design is really, really awesome. They really thought about it hard, about making good racing on a track like that, but at the same time having it a fun track to drive on, because it's really easy to build a track that has really fast and fun corners, but at the same time kind of ruin the racing on the track. Because I find that the more like fast and fun corners there are, the harder it is to race, because you can't get close enough because you lose so much downforce when you're behind someone and following somebody. And also, if you have really fun and fast corners that are really require a lot of bravery, everybody can't really run side by side through those corners, so it makes it even tougher to pass. But I think Austin did a really good job of combining some really, really fast flowing corners, that are really fun to drive on, but at the same time created a lot of passing opportunities as well, because they had so many hairpins that had this. I'd never really seen this at a track before, but all the hairpins on the entry, they get really, really wide, and you can kind of just like, it's like so hard to position your car to stop someone from passing you because the track's so wide, and they can either go really, really wide on the outside, or they can go really, really, really tight on the inside, and it just provides an extra little bit of room for racing and overtaking. So for our race, it was really, really exciting, and it's definitely one of my favorite places to drive on. It was incredible.
Well, you go from Austin, and as you say, very, very wide, to the streets of St. Petersburg, where the walls are right there, right next to you. Turn one, I guess you could say it starts out nice and wide before you funnel into to turn two. But is there a big change in how you approach the race weekend, going from a natural terrain road course like Circuit of the Americas, or coming up here to Mid Ohio, versus going to a street course like Toronto or St. Pete?
Oh yeah, there's definitely a huge difference in the way you approach the track. At Austin, you approach a track in the first practice session, you go out and you really, really push the limits almost instantly and straight away. Because if you run off, there's no consequences. Like if you outbrake yourself, you just use the exit roads and there's no walls to hit really. I mean, it's really safe. And so, at Austin, you just go all out, kind of balls to the wall in the first practice session and, learn all the braking spots and really get the limit, as quickly as possible so you can understand what the car is doing in the track and, really start getting into a rhythm. Whereas I find, if you go to a street circuit, you have to be really, really reserved in the way you approach, learning the track and pushing the limits because if you have such a short time to learn the track that if you crash out, in one session, you lose that whole session of learning the track and you get pushed back behind progress, and you just get behind everybody. And it's so hard to make that time up again, developing the car on the track and learning the track and getting up to speed. You just absolutely cannot afford to crash in a practice session of a street circuit, especially if it's your first time there. So, I tend to be a little bit more reserved when I, go to street circuits as opposed to road courses. At the same time, you still need to push on a street circuit because there's so much time to be made up in all the tight corners and fast corners because, a lot of people get kind of scared of the walls and, the closer you can get to the walls, the more time you make up. So it's kind of like one of those, ironic things, I guess.
Well, was this the first time that you had driven on street circuits when you came to the USF 2000 series, when you came here to the US?
No, actually, I raced on street circuits in Formula Ford, so I got quite a lot of experience on street circuits.
Okay.
So it wasn't too much of a big jump for me. I mean, I got to race Formula Ford on the Surfers Paradise street circuit, and that street circuit is really quite something. So I think if you can, kind of learn to drive on, the Surfers Paradise street circuit, you'll be fine everywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, another often unique thing about open wheel racing here in the U.S. is some races all you do is turn left. When you came to Lucas Oil Raceway last year, was that your first oval, or had you experienced oval racing before?
No, that was the first oval I'd ever seen in my life. So it was quite unique. I mean, I must admit I had a really bad perception of ovals, before I'd even, come over to America and raced and even seen an oval. My expectations and my perception of ovals were not very high. Highly regarded. I kind of, looked in from the outside and kind of thought you just turn left and it wasn't really exciting and it was boring and whatnot. But, I listened to my dad a little bit. I mean, it's kind of tough as I'm a teenager to kind of listen to my dad and take what he says. I guess that's just natural. But he'd been telling me a little bit about how exciting ovals were when he was racing in the Indy 500. And I'd saw, a lot of stuff from my grandfather when he went to the Indy 500 as well. And it looked pretty exciting, but I don't know. I just had that natural reaction to, and just didn't really hold them that highly. But, when I first drove on an oval, I mean, I nearly, oh my God, it was completely different to like anything I had expected at all. It was, I just almost like, I couldn't explain it. I mean, it was so different and unique to anything I'd ever driven or done before. It was just incredible. I mean, I couldn't, like in the first session, I couldn't get over, like my mind could not keep up with how fast everything was happening. And, you know, that was the biggest thing I had to get used to, was trying to, you know, train my mind to take in everything faster and react all a lot quicker, because everything happens so much faster on an oval, because you're just going, you know, just you're constantly, you know, entering turns, you know, 2 to 3 times faster than what you ever would on a road course, because it's banked and, you know, it's gripped up, and they're quite long and fast turns. So, you know, if I had a little moment, you know, I'd almost like, you know, poo my pants, because it happened so quickly, and I had to react so much quicker and save the car. It was just, it just took me a long time to get used to it. But I actually find I have a lot more fun on ovals now, driving on ovals, than I do on road courses, because it's such a new thing for me. And, you know, I've been doing well on them as well, and I've always had, you know, great cars, and it's just always been a lot of fun, you know, racing so close and side by side with people. And I know, like, my first race, when I was racing with Spencer, I mean, we were side by side for almost, you know, 4 or 5 laps, and it was like such an intense, like the most intense racing I've ever done in my life, where, you know, you're really, really on the edge and you're right next to somebody, and it's just one of those things that's just a little different and unique, and I just enjoyed it immensely.
Well, yeah, you've done all right this year. You took pole, fastest lap, and the race win at Lucas Oil Raceway there the night before the 500, and also at the Milwaukee Mile. And the Lucas Oil Raceway is such a unique oval, since it seems like the fast line all the way around is right up against that wall, as opposed to Milwaukee, where it, like with a typical turn, you're diving down towards the apex and then kind of accelerating out. When you first came to Milwaukee, did it take a little bit to reset the thinking from what you did at Lucas Oil to readapt your thinking and your line?
Yeah, definitely a little bit. I mean, Lucas Oil is just one of those tracks where, you know, you're right against the wall the whole way around, so you've got absolutely no room for error. And, you know, if you make one slightest mistake, you're in the wall. So it was, you know, you have to concentrate so hard, and it's such a fun track to drive on. But Milwaukee for us was also really exciting. I mean, it took a little bit more of a traditional, basically, you know, road course line, where, you know, you start wide and you enter the middle of the corner, you apex the corner, and then you run back wide again. So I found the Milwaukee line was, you know, quite a lot easier to learn than the Lucas Oil Raceway line, because, you know, it was something that I was used to, you know, racing road courses all my life. It was a little bit easier to learn, but Milwaukee was really exciting for us. I mean, in our cars, it was almost like the Indy 500, because it's such a wide track, and we have so much grip with our cars that, you know, in qualifying, you know, I was pretty much flat the whole way around, no lifting. And when you're right on the edge of flat, or like just having to lift, it's really exciting, because you have to decide before you even get to the corner whether you're going to take it flat or not. And you kind of throw the car into the corner and you don't lift. And when you're holding it flat the whole way through the corner, you're just like your foot shaking and like everything. You're always thinking, oh, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. So it was pretty exciting. I mean, IRP is one of those tracks where you really have to kind of, you know, lift and wait for the car to grip in the corner, and there's definitely a little bit of, you know, pedal work there. But Milwaukee was definitely a fast track for us, and that was like a whole new experience again a little bit for me, so I found it really fun.
Well, you have three more event weekends to go, Mid-Ohio, Trois-Rivières, and Houston. And then the championship's done. You've got a 51-point lead right now, and so assuming that you keep on doing what you've been doing, your car doesn't blow up on you, we're looking forward to 2014 up in Indy Lights, yes? Have you been thinking that direction yet, or are you still on 2013?
We're definitely still focusing on this year, but, you know, you always have to, you know, make plans and make sure that everything's in line for the next year, because if this year doesn't work out so well, then you kind of have to rush around and sort everything out again. So, you know, we're planning for the future at the same time, but, you know, all the focus right now is on the championship for us, and me and the team, because anything can happen. You know, motor racing is a very unpredictable sport, and, you know, it's just one of those things where you have to constantly focus and not lose train of thought, or not get complacent at all, and treat, you know, every race as its own race, and not get caught up too much in other things. So, you know, for us, I mean, we've got 6 races left, and it's really, really coming down to the critical point. in the championship. And if something goes wrong or we have a bad race, we don't have any time to recover. It's not like we have the rest of the year to, catch back up or build a lead and whatnot. So it's really coming down to crunch time for us. And really where the championship's won or lost. And at this point in time, I guess it's my championship to lose, really. So we're just going to be focusing on just getting championship points in every race, and not getting too excited about other things. Or I'm just going to be focusing on just getting points and finishing off the championship strong and not making any mistakes, I guess, and just keeping it clean.
Well, best of luck in Mid-Ohio. We're sure to see you there. Look forward to, I'll be there with my camera doing the photography thing. Hope to get some good images of you on track. And want to wrap up our conversation talking about maybe some of the other motorsports interests that you have. In your bio on the Pro Mazda page, it has here that your racing hero is Valentino Rossi,
Yeah.
the doctor from MotoGP. And I have to ask, what, not Casey Stoner? Not your countryman?
No, unfortunately, no. I mean, me and my dad had this thing going on when, I was a little kid and would watch the MotoGP races, every single race for the whole year. And I don't know how it happened, but for whatever reason, my dad and I were just massive, MotoGP fans and motorbike fans, I guess.
Well, it's great racing.
We really got into the racing side of it, because those guys had the most incredible races. I mean, I remember watching Valentino Rossi race against the American guy,
Nicky
what
Hayden.
was his name? Yeah, Nicky Hayden and all those guys. And even Kenny, I was watching Valentino Rossi, when he was racing against Sete Gibernau and
Oh, yes.
Kenny Roberts as well, and all those like incredible battles. And it was just amazing to see, Rossi go through so many years of head-to-head rivalries, I guess. Like even, kind of like rivalry, the same type of rivalry Spencer and I had last year. And even like the Senna-Prost rivalries. I mean, it's just those rivalries and like head-to-head clashes in motor racing really, really make it exciting. And at that point in time, the big rivalry I found that was, always between Rossi and someone else. So I became a big Rossi fan. And unfortunately, Casey Stoner became a Rossi rivalry, and I had to stay loyal to Valentino Rossi, even though Casey Stoner was Australian. So that's, I guess, why I'm not a Casey Stoner fan, but a Rossi fan. So, but yeah, I mean, it's not so much the motorsport side. I just love racing, motor racing, like whether it's motorcycles, dirt track, ovals. I mean, I just, find that enjoyment of racing against other people. My enjoyment is not just driving the car so much really at all. It's just, head to head, like combat, I guess, with other people. Being competitive and beating other people is what I get my enjoyment out of.
Have you thought about rally racing at all? Did a
I
little
mean,
off-season snowdrift?
oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'd be lots of fun. But I mean, I just haven't really, been around the people that do that kind of thing. I mean, I'm sure if I was around those types of, or grew up in that kind of environment, I'd definitely be out there, giving it a go. But I mean, it looks like a lot of fun. I'd love to give it a go.
Well, let me ask you one last question. This is something that we ask everybody that joins us, and that is, if you had a single day to spend at any track in the world, with any racing driver in the world, current or from the past, what track and with whom would you spend it?
It would probably be have to I'd have to say it'd be a Formula One car with Sebastian Vettel at the Nürburgring, a local track, his local track, the world champion, just so I could kind of get a benchmark of where I am, where I'm at compared to the best in the world, I guess. So that'd be my decision.
All right, well, Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking time out. And like we said, best of luck in Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was great having a chat.